Okay, so wrapping up now this hour, what I want to do is I want to talk about, if we look at tithing and St. Paul's words about offering as our bit, I turned it off.
I don't trust you.
As our, okay. I'll turn it off when I want to say something. I don't want you to record. You shouldn't have taught me how to press that button. Now you lost my, I lost my place. Let's start again. Now that we kind of looked at tithing and biblical teachings about giving, we don't spend enough time sometimes thinking about what the gift is, okay? And so the first thing that I want to say is, and it sounds strange, but it really has to be emphasized, our gift to God is a gift. It's a gift. It's not a payment. It's not in return for something. It's a gift. Okay? As St. Paul says, each one must do as he has made up his mind, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. It's a gift. And when we know gifts in other kind of aspects of our life. You know, we give a gift to our children on their birthdays or for Christmas. We give a gift to our wives and our husbands on anniversaries. There are all sorts of ways that we understand giving gifts, and we can kind of maybe just avoid talking about re-gifting, but we know that generally speaking, when we talk about giving gifts, when we give a gift to someone, we give a gift and we let go. We let go. Okay, we decide maybe what we want to spend on the gift. We decide what the gift is. Maybe somebody even asks us, like our children might say, this is really what I want. And we decide to grant that request. But once we give a gift, it is a gift. We understand in all the other aspects of our life that giving that gift means letting go. It's not ours anymore. It's theirs. And it's the same thing with God. When we give a gift to God of anything, we let go. It's not ours. Did you have a question?
Yeah, so, in speaking of that, how do you know to be a wise steward versus being foolish? Because, it's all of God's. It's just your pass-through to distribute.
Let's talk about that for the next half hour.
Can you repeat the questions just for the recording?
Nice and loud.
How do we approach or address giving wisely versus giving foolishly?
How do we approach or address giving wisely versus giving foolishly? We're going to talk about that. Okay. So the first point is that a gift is a gift. If it becomes an obligation, if we look at our giving to God as an obligation, it is a bill we pay, not a gift. Okay. Everyone gets bills. Okay. A mortgage, a cable bill, or satellite bill, or whatever you have, a phone bill. Everyone gets bills, and they know how to pay them. You know what happens if you don't pay them. You lose the services that you've agreed to pay for. All right? That is not what our gift to the church is. Our gift to the church is not an obligation as a bill. Okay? Every month you get this bill from the church and you have to pay it. Now I have to tell you, very few things surprise me, Father, but when I asked how many were Cradle Orthodox and only two people put up their hands, I was genuinely surprised. Very little surprises me anymore. So I will tell you that it is not unknown in those older parishes that were established by immigrants. It is not unknown even to this day that they fund their churches through dues. Okay? That everyone gets a bill from the church and says you owe $250, you owe $400, whatever, and they pay their bill, and that makes them a member of the church. Well, that is so absolutely anti-scriptural and anti-Christian and anti-church that it's a practice that is completely abusive. It's also absolutely self-destructive, because in general, when you ask someone to pay a bill, very few people pay you more than the bill. Okay? If you ask someone for $250, they're going to give you $250. They don't have to think about it other than that. And they certainly are not going to be moved to give you more. So we cannot take care of God and the church with obligations as bills, okay? If it is a bill, it isn't a gift. It isn't a gift. And then finally, as we already mentioned briefly, Gifts to the church, gifts to God have to come with no strings attached. Okay? If a real gift as a gift is something that we let go of to our children, to our spouses, to other people, it's the same thing in the life of the church. When we write our check to the church, when we go to PayPal and pay whatever we do, when we give that gift to the church, we have to let go. Okay? Maybe sometimes decisions are made in the life of the church that you don't agree with. All right? Too bad. Okay? Your gift to the church is your gift to the church. I guarantee you some silly things are going to come up as you get into your building program. What color is the carpet going to be? Okay?
Carpet.
Yeah. Is there a carpet? Right. You know? I mean, that's going to be a question. Do we want tile? Do we want wood? Do we want parquet? Do we want... Those little silly questions are going to come up, and there's going to be little voices in some people that say, well, if they don't do it that way, I'm not giving towards it. You know? Well, I mean, that's something you have to live with, but ultimately, then, that's not a gift. Ultimately, then, when you attach strings and conditions, it's not a gift. Now, there is a difference, and this is very, very important. There is a difference in everything that we've been talking about between a gift and a sacrifice. Okay? And we sometimes conflate the two. We sometimes bring the two together to think that if I really am supporting God and the church, and I really am, let's say I even decide that I'm going to tithe, that I have made my sacrifice to the Lord. That's simply not true. It's simply not true. Scriptural scriptural teaching and the life of the church seems very, very clear that we do not sacrifice to the Lord until we give more than the tithe. Okay, the tithe is a minimum. And until we give a tithe, everything that we give is simply part of our giving. It is not a sacrifice. Sacrifice is after the tithe. The teaching of the scriptures is that the first 10% of everything that we have belongs to God, not to us. I know it was a little Protestant tract or something like that, but it was really effective. I saw a little tract about giving one time that did not talk about money, but it talked about apples. Okay? And as you went along, it talked about giving to God and how God gives us all apples. And you go through the like the first page into the second page, and there's a couple of apples on each page. And on the last page, the 10th apple in the flyer was all chewed up and consumed. Okay? And the point of the tract was, if that's what you've done with the 10th, then you haven't given it to God. And it was very effective. It's a very visual and very effective thing. So the first 10% of everything that we have belongs to God, not to us. But it is very, very clear, and I mentioned this before, that even before worship in the Old Testament, there was sacrifice. That God commanded people to offer sacrifice. Cain and Abel came to a very unfortunate incident because God accepted one sacrifice and not the other. There was already sacrifice in the life of humanity by in God's relationship with us. So everyone is called to sacrifice. So what are the attributes? If you look at the scriptures, if you look at the teaching of the church, if you look at even the preaching of the fathers, what are real attributes of sacrifice? The first attribute of giving and sacrifice is that it is first fruits. Okay? This is so incredibly important to us as Christians. What does first fruits mean? Does anybody want to take a crack at it? What is first fruits?
It's the first money that you have.
The first thing you do with your blessings, right? You don't pay your mortgage and your car payment and your cable bill and your electric bill and your gas bill and your water bill and then say, okay, this is what I have left. This is what I can give to God and the church now. Sacrifice requires, and God requires in the scriptures, that it be first fruits, that it be the first thing you look at. The second attribute of sacrifice is that it was blameless, that when you had a sheep or a bull or something that you were offering as a sacrifice, it wasn't that you looked at your flock and you figured out that lame sick sheep is not going to make it much longer. So let's take that one and let's give that one to God and offer that because it won't really affect me. The offering had to be blameless. It had to be a sheep without blemish, because the offering had to reflect Christ. Christ was the one who was offered and sacrificed without spot, without blemish, without any kind of sin. The third aspect of sacrifice is that it was redemptive. Okay? Redemptive. That offering a sacrifice in the Old Testament was a sin offering. That when we came to the altar and we offered our gifts, it was for the redemption of our souls. It was for the forgiveness of our sins. That the sacrifice that we offer to God is part of our relationship with Him in that understanding of repentance and forgiveness. So the offering of sacrifice was redemptive. And then finally, the perfect example of sacrifice is the Passover. Okay? It was the perfect example of sacrifice because it is iconic in the Old Testament and it is reality in the New Testament. The Passover in the Old Testament was what? What was the Passover?
The original or the annual?
The original Passover. What was the first Passover? What was it? Okay, it was the final sign to Pharaoh that he should let the Jews go, right? So what was going to happen? All the firstborn were going to be killed, except who? The blood of the lamb on the lintels of their doors, right? And then the angel of death would pass over that because the blood of the lamb was on the door, all right? So the sacrifice of that lamb, the sacrifice of that lamb, which by commandment of God had to be first fruits and blameless, the sacrifice of that lamb and its blood saved the Jews from the angel of death. And then Pharaoh finally said, go, and the great exodus of Egypt from Egypt begins. Okay, it's absolutely iconic of Pascha. Passover is Pascha. That's what the word means, Passover. In the New Testament, the Passover of Christ, the Pascha of Christ, is exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. His chosen people will not be visited by the angel of death because the blood of the Lamb has saved them. Okay, their Passover, their exodus, will not be a journey from life to death, but rather the opposite. That the Passover, the Pascha now, is a journey from death to life. And so the Passover crossing the Red Sea, all of that imagery is the same imagery that Christ fulfills in the New Testament. So the attributes of sacrifice of first fruits, blameless and redemptive, are seen perfectly in the first Passover of the Jews and then the Passover of Christ in his crucifixion and his resurrection. Exactly the same attributes. St. John Chrysostom says that we do not sacrifice to the Lord. And St. John Chrysostom was in the 4th and the 5th century, so well into the New Testament church. St. John Chrysostom said that we do not sacrifice to the Lord until we surpass the tithe. Okay? That's in those sermons that you want to, if you ever want to read about, wealth and poverty from St. John Chrysostom. And then St. Paul says to the Romans, 12:1, we are to be the living sacrifice. That we ourselves must be the living sacrifice being consumed by God in our life as we offer ourselves in our journey to the kingdom. So sacrifice is what the actual is actually after what is what would be considered the minimum of our offering to God, the 10% that we would offer to God. So the gift that we offer ultimately is a reflection of our heart and ultimately is how we show our relationship to God. And there are two fundamental questions. One is, do we trust God to provide? That is one question. And the second question is, do we trust God to keep his promise? Okay? So all the words that we heard from St. Paul, all the things that you can reflect on in Scripture, says that God will provide whatever he needs for his people and for his church. And the way he provides that is through us, that he gives us our resources, our blessings, everything that, that we are kind of like, I can't think of a better word, but this is not a good word, is in control of in this world. We're not really in control of anything. But the things that we can manage in this world, that God provides all of that, and he provides enough so that we can offer what hopefully in the transformation of our hearts we want to offer. Not that we need to offer or we have to offer. Because that's the temptation, of course, when you're talking about biblical minimums and everything else, is you can become very pharisaical. You could become pharisaical about every kind of spiritual effort. You can become pharisaical about your prayer. You can become pharisaical about fasting, about giving, about time in the church, everything. You can convince yourself very easily that if you come to liturgy every week and you kind of mumble your daily prayers, that you're doing pretty good, especially compared to you-know-who, you know? We can very easily fall into that trap. And so that first question, do we trust God to provide, is the answer is given to us, but the trust has to come from within us. It's not something that God can impose on us. It's not something that his grace will somehow fill us with against our will, you know. I love C.S. Lewis, the great Christian writer, said one time that God is a gentleman, that he will never come in to any house in which he's not invited. And what he was talking about was our hearts. That God will not impose himself on us. His grace will not fill us to do things that we are not inclined to do. And so we have to convert our own hearts. And so do we trust God to provide? Okay, that's a question. And then the second question, of course, is do we trust God to keep his promise? And his promise to us was that if we follow him in the way that he asks us to follow him, that the reward is that mansion in heaven which has been prepared from before time began. Okay? And so both of those questions of trust are fundamental questions that each and every one of us has to answer for ourselves. We have to answer it for ourselves, but then when we answer that and that trust fills us and begins to move us, then that trust has to spill over into concrete action. And concrete action means that we pray and we meditate and we actually begin to give in the way that God asks us to give, that we actually begin to trust him the way God asks us to trust him, and that we let go of the things that we think we can kind of control. My parish gets sick of me saying this because I say it a lot. But I remind them, excuse me, I remind them all the time of the lovely little saying that if you want to see God laugh, make plans. You know, if you want to see God laugh, make plans. It's a reminder to us all the time that we are not in control of anything. Now, it doesn't mean that there's predestination. It doesn't mean that God is moving us around the world like chess pieces. What it does mean is that God ultimately will bring to us what he brings to us, whether we want it or not. What we do with it is up to us, but he will bring to us what he wants. And as we mentioned last night in the book of Job, the ultimate message is my ways are not your ways. Your ways are not my ways, you know. And our answer actually, in any kind of circumstance, should be exactly the same words that Job uttered right at the beginning. You know, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Okay, if we bless the Lord with our heart and with our mind and with our soul, then it will manifest itself in all these other concrete actions of giving, of prayer, of fasting, even of taking care of the world the way we should be taking care of the world. It all will manifest itself when we do that. Finally, any questions about all that? Finally, I would like to, yeah.
Can I ask for a clarification with, you spoke of this being a gift, what we give to the church is a gift, and then spoke of sacrifice. Should all of it within the tithe and into the sacrifice be a gift in the sense of it all needs to be a free will offering? Or is the first 10% a gift and then we start sacrificing? I'm just I don't quite know how the words overlap or don't. Or...
Well, I can only restate the words of St. John Chrysostom, who says that we do not sacrifice a thing until we surpass the tithe. Now, if you want to look at it like, is everything free will? Of course it is, you know. And that gets back to even God will not make us do something we are not inclined to do. We can absolutely pave our road to hell with our own riches. If we choose to do that, God will simply let us do it. He will. But if you're talking about the difference between a gift and a sacrifice, what I'm trying to impart is that both are somehow important and part of Christian living. That we do have to have a regular, honest return to God of the things that are His as a gift. We can't hold on to them. They're not ours. But then there is always the temptation to be Pharisaical and say, that's enough. When in reality, Jesus said everything. And so when you go past that tithe and you begin to do more, then it becomes sacrificial. You know, one point that I didn't mention about sacrifice is not only that it's in Scripture and God asks all of us to sacrifice to some extent, but one of the real kind of ways that you can find out if it's a sacrifice is if it hurts. Okay? One of the things we never talk about giving is that almost everybody, I think there are very, very few people who are of such mean spirit that they don't give to the church because they think the church should suffer or they don't, you know. I guess maybe there are some people that say all the church ever does is talk about money and everything else. I don't know a lot of people like that anymore. But I do think that people, even of goodwill, are willing to stop at giving that doesn't make a difference in my life. You know what I mean? Like, if I give $50, is that going to make a difference in my life? Probably not. If I give $500, is that going to make a difference in my life? Yeah, probably. And when I honestly look at myself, I think I really should give the $500, but that means I'm going to have some tight moments and things. That's when we kind of, in a really less than exalted way of determining that it's a sacrifice. You know, if we feel it, you know, we've got to feel it. And I think that when we feel it, that's when it ultimately becomes important to us, you know, and we're willing to take that step.
So when we're saying that the tithe is the first 10%, that's the minimum that we give. So if a person's thinking, okay, I'm tithing, can the sacrifice be added to the tithe, I guess, is what I'm asking. So mm-hmm. If you're looking at your tithe and going, you know, yeah, it's the 10%, but, you know, I could probably really give 15%. Or I can give 20%. It might make me uncomfortable at the end of the month a little bit, but I could do it. Is that then also considered sacrifice and tithe at the same time? Do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, I think we're getting a little too much into semantics. But
oh, okay.
But I think that, you know, when you your tithe is your gift. You know, if you want to sacrifice beyond that, you know, I would also say, just in a practical sense, as parish life, after many, many years as a parish priest, I think that every parish should strive to fund their day-to-day life with tithes. And everything else, every other sacrifice should be for something else. In your parish, maybe it's the building fund. You know, you've got to build a church. So support your church in your daily tithes. But then make your sacrifice to the building fund. If you want to go beyond kind of what you think you should, then that above and beyond can fund something that needs to happen in the life of the church. And that sacrifice is important too.
I just want to make sure we get back to Dennis's question about kind of proper management of your own personal finances.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about foolish giving and wise giving.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and forgive me if I'm reading into, but for example, if someone is giving up their retirement and everything, and then they're destitute, they've just foolishly given away their whole life, and although that can be dressed up as piety and nobility,
right.
Now they're at a point where they're completely destitute.
Instead of piety, nobility, it's your responsibility.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I does that kind of.
It is, and it's just, I guess, also just simple examples is, you know, you see a homeless person on the street and you can give a dollar, or are you giving to the food bank already and there's opportunities for them going there?
Yeah.
If we come up with some idea for, I don't want to say like you market the church, but Father wants to buy a Lamborghini and put, you know, the church.
How did you know? I haven't told anyone about that yet. That's our next fundraiser.
He told me how much he likes his Dodge, what is it?
Caliber
with a crank windows. I haven't seen one of those in a long time. You know, of course, you can't roll the windows down, but.
But I mean, to donate to that, like.
Yeah, I think one thing that I think we haven't really maybe touched on enough is simply that all of it is a matter of conscience. You know, I think that you have to be realistic in the sense that there are some people who are literally called to sell everything, give it to the poor, and follow Christ. They're called monks. Okay. If you're living in the world and you're married and you have children and you have a mortgage and things, you have to be responsible. I mean, you have to make sure that you don't get irresponsible with the blessings that God has given you either. Now, I'm going to talk in a moment about some personal observations, but that whatever our human circumstances are does not excuse us from caring for the life of the church. It does not excuse us from caring for the poor. It does not excuse us from whatever God brings across our path. But there are moments that come into our life where you do have to have questions of conscience. Okay, for example, you pass a homeless person and you think to yourself, well, I'm already giving to the food bank. Okay, well, does that person go to the food bank? I mean, there's a question there. But then another question is, did God put that person in your path for a reason? You know? If you give him a dollar, if you give him $5, is he going to spend it on booze? Well, who cares? You know, as I read one time, you know, someone gave money to a poor person and the kid was with him. And he said to his dad, he said, well, you know, that guy's just going to go and buy something bad with it. And the father said to him, what he does with that money says a lot about his character. What I did says a lot about my character. And so you're always faced with these questions of conscience, especially when you're talking about giving, you know. But I'll give you, I'm not going to use that example. I'm not going to use that example. You always face a question about what is sacrifice, okay? If you run across a homeless person and you give them $5, does that really make a difference in your life? I don't know a lot of people where that $5 makes a lot of difference in their life. Does that $5 do a great deal in that person's life? Maybe. Maybe it gives them lunch when they weren't going to have lunch. But ultimately, all of it is going to be presented to God. You know, like, what do we do with it? Now, I will say, Father used the example of, like, you know, somebody just cashes out their retirement account and gives it to the church or to the monastery or something. That's a choice that some people make. Whether or not it's a holy choice is between them and God, ultimately. But it also then leads to other consequences. You know, is it non-Christian? Is it evil to give everything you have to someone else? Of course not. Is it evil to do that either for the glory and recognition or so that you can complain and suffer for the next 20 years of your life? Yeah, that's evil.
Or to then live off the state.
I'm sorry?
Or to then live off the state.
Or then to live off the state or something like that, yeah. So, I mean, everybody has a life. And you've got to manage that life to the best of your ability and to the glory of God. I will tell you, in a personal sense, I have a retirement account. I have an IRA, okay? I do tithe, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. I'm not going to sell my IRA and give it to the church, okay? My IRA is going to help fund my retirement, hopefully long and healthy. And out of that, I am still going to tithe. But eventually, I still have a wife. I still have 4 children. I still have 6.5 grandchildren, maybe more. Those are all also responsible decisions. And they are not anti-Christian. And they are not offensive to God for me to take care of my family, you know. So everything has to be balanced with the reality of what the church and the scriptures teach us, and the reality on this, if you will, where the rubber meets the road in our life, you know.
So then a follow up on this is, like with no strings attached, I, you know, you give the church and it's done. So what if, before you give it to the church, that if there's a question that you have in what you're giving, is the church using it wisely?
Well, I mean, we talked about that. The church has an obligation to use it wisely.
But if, how do you approach if you feel like maybe this is a bad decision or...
Parish council.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there are avenues in parish life for you to be a participant in those decisions. And I would say that if you're talking about the day-to-day life of the parish, you know, should we pay the electric bill? You know, of course you pay your electric bill. Should you pay your rent? Of course you pay your rent. You don't have a place to worship if you don't. But if you're talking about real issues where you think money is being misused or not used wisely or there's a better way to use it, I think even in a sense you have an obligation to participate in the decision making. You know, to say to someone, you know, you're building a building and I'm a contractor, you really shouldn't do that. That's a good thing. Okay, that's a really good thing. And so those kind of things, you have to...
Just, it's the parish council that makes financial decisions in the parish. I don't. It all goes through the parish council. That is what the parish council is there for. So that's where financial decisions are being made. And if you're interested in being part of those financial decisions, or even just to be savvy of them, that's why I invite people to parish council meetings every single time.
And
that's,
I think
that's where it happens.
I also think that's a way to offer time and talent, is coming to the parish council. Okay.
Now we're going to have like 50 people there tomorrow and try to fit into that.
Well, I didn't say it, you did.
But Father, I just want to make sure I'm clarifying here. The gift is the gift. When the money is given, you said you let it go. You don't go back and go, oh, I gave, but now I don't like how you are,
right,
or how the church is managing, or...
Within reason. If you find out that funds are being misused, if you find out that funds are being funneled, if you find something nefarious, mm-hmm, of course you have to challenge it and you have to not participate in that. You know. But I mean, from everything I've seen, you have financial statements up on your board, you have a parish council that's working. I think everything here is completely transparent. You know, so I don't think there's any problem with that kind of thing. You know. Any other questions? Yeah.
You mentioned that you like to remind your parishioners that if you want to make God laugh, plan. But just for clarification, are you saying it's inappropriate to plan? That we ought not plan?
I think you have a responsibility to plan with a healthy understanding that it may not go exactly the way you think. As human beings, obviously we plan. I mean, I put money every month into my retirement account. That's a plan. Okay? If my plane crashes on the way to Seattle today, I never get to use that retirement account. It's not exactly what I'm planning.
Sure.
Okay.
So our plans can go awry, but things don't happen if we don't plan for them.
Absolutely. But you do have to have a healthy understanding that you ultimately leave everything in God's hands. And if things turn a little bit this and there, you know, there are people that get mad because their plans don't happen exactly the way they make them. You know, you can't live your life that way. That's for sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
What about tithing the state? I've been in churches where they ask you to do a trust where you get 10% of your estate.
Mm-hmm.
You might leave a lot to your children, but you leave 10% to the church.
Well, estate planning, I think, is really important. I think that in today's world, with the structure of finance and legal things that we have today, I encourage people to plan... as they plan their estates, to include the church in that plan. You know, if you have a will, you should include the church in your will. If you have a trust, you should include the church in that trust. You should make it very, very clear what the church is going to get and how it's to be used. You know, I wouldn't put a lot of restrictions on it, but I mean, if I were going to give, let's say, $100,000 of my estate to the church and say it should be used to beautify the temple, to pay for the icon project in our new church, perfectly appropriate, you know. If it should endow things so that the priest always has a housing allowance, perfectly appropriate, that kind of thing. But absolutely, estate planning, that's a totally different workshop, plan giving. But estate planning is really important in our world. In Western society, in America, estate planning is really, really important. And not enough people actually do plan for the church, you know. So So you can make a legacy gift that actually would keep your memory alive in the church for generations in the way you plan your estate. Absolutely. That's a different workshop, though.
And for a church that had a large building project on its horizon and underway and likely to incur a reasonable amount of debt, that would be certainly a good targeted purpose as a priority in the state to retire debt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And secondarily, if the debt no longer exists because they live 20 years, then X.
Right. We don't have time really to get into it, but I mean, there you can do an actual, you could do another workshop on plan giving and endowments and things like that. How do you fund the church for future generations and things like that? There are all sorts of different legal avenues now. We didn't get into unique ways of giving. For example, it's early in the year now, but late in the year, there are people that are always looking to dump stocks that have made capital gains. Okay, if you have not thought about this in your parish, get a brokerage account, and parishioners can donate appreciated stock. They get the deduction of the gift. They don't have to declare the appreciation as capital gains, and you get a full gift to the life of the church. That's a unique way of funding the church. You can include estate planning. You can include trusts. You can include, there are even living trusts that you can do where the church gets funds now and pays interest on them to you. There are all sorts of legal avenues of interesting ways of giving. If you have a required minimum distribution from your retirement account, I have one family in my parish, every January, he has a letter that says, I'm required to take this much out of my retirement account. It's going to come to the church as a check. I'd like this to be part of my stewardship.
But it's not taxable.
And it's not taxable. He doesn't have to pay tax on the income. He doesn't pay tax on anything. And he gets the deduction for the gift. Yeah. So there are unique ways of giving even. And that's planning also. You know, so be smart. Okay. I'm coming up in less than 10 years when I have to have required minimum distribution. That's going to be something I do. Okay, I'm going to tie to the church by beginning with that, you know, because why not use the system that we're given? So there are all sorts of unique ways that you can do that too. So we're running out of time here. I want to just say a couple of things personally. We talked a lot about the difference between what God teaches us about giving and the prosperity gospel. Okay. That we do not believe that God is going to reward you with wealth and riches because you have followed his word. We believe that God will give you what you need in order to do what he would like you to do. There's a big difference in that. And I want to tell you two stories about myself as examples of that. You shared already, and I'm going to share two stories with you. My wife and I have been blessed to raise four children. Okay, we have three boys and then a girl. She was a complete surprise to us. We didn't even know that humans could come out looking like that. We were in very, very small parishes where we were very, very poor. And my first parish was a mission parish much like this. In fact, you're much further along than my mission parish was. We were worshiping in the basement of a nursing home. And we stayed and we worked hard there. And when it came time for us to leave, because we personally had outgrown the parish could not support us. My wife was expecting our fourth child. We were making it because she was teaching and she couldn't teach with four kids. And by the time we left, they had 5 acres of land paid off, and they had built a church later on and everything else. Our second parish was a parish where we were literally destitute. We had four children. I was making $900 a month. They did have a parish house, and that was helpful, but it was still not enough. At that time, this was in the 80s, and my wife was a teacher, and she was going to go back to teaching. And at that time, they were allowed or weren't afraid to say, why would we hire you? We can get somebody new and pay them a starting salary instead of with your 9 years experience. And so at that time, I had an opportunity to go into the chaplaincy of the Air Force. And so I signed up for the reserves and began to supplement our income that way, but then an opportunity came up to go on active duty. And for the first time in our lives, we were actually able to pay our bills. First time in our life. My car broke down 3 times on the way to the Air Force Base in Texas. That's how poor we were. Church mice pitied us, okay? We finally kind of stabilized everything in the Air Force, and then I realized there that I really missed parish life. And so I sent out letters to bishops, and I said, you know, I'm interested in getting back into parish life. And it's not, only one bishop responded and offered me the parish that we went to in Connecticut, New Britain, Connecticut, Holy Trinity Church. And in that parish, as we began, when I came to meet with them, they had what I told you about as a dues system. Okay, so they had $250 a year dues if you wanted to be a member of the parish. Well, that wasn't cutting it. And you couldn't pay your bills, even though the church was paid off and everything else. So they said, Father, the one thing we want to do is we want to move from the dues system into stewardship and pledging. I said, I can do that. You know, I can teach you that. And so we started Stewardship and Pledging 101. And my first lesson that I took with me from the Air Force is that a leader cannot ask his people to do something that he is not willing to do. And so for the first time in our lives, we began to seriously look at our giving. And we had 4 children who were now growing. Our oldest son was 10 when we moved there. And so we were facing a number of years of all sorts of teenage stuff and then college and everything else. But the church really needed to move forward. So I began to teach them about tithing, and I began to teach them about giving, and I began to teach them about pledging. And but I thought, well, to be a good leader, I had to do it. So we began to drastically increase our giving. And so we reached a point where we were tithing. And at one point, after my first son went to college, the tithe became tight for us. And then a second kid went to college. And then 1 year we had 3 kids in college. And every month I wrote that check out. And every month, I will swear to you, every month I was tempted to not write the check. Every month I was tempted to just say, God, you know what we're doing here. You know that we're sending 3 kids to college. You know that. But every month I wrote that check out because I needed to be a good leader in the parish. And every one of our kids got through college. And every one of our kids came out of college without debt. We didn't lose our house. We didn't lose our cars. We didn't, you know, we didn't have any money in the bank. But my tithe to the church never ever caused me to miss a meal. Never ever caused me to suffer in any way, shape, or form, other than griping and grousing that I had 3 kids in college and how can God expect that, you know? So tithing began to make a difference in my life. And we began to practice tithing regularly. To this day, I'm amazed that a parish priest and a school teacher raised 4 children, bought a home. I always tell people, we had nice cars. They were Chevys, but they were nice cars. You know, I mean, I wasn't driving around in junk. And then we were actually even able to, you know, start a retirement account and everything else. And we're able to actually kind of maybe look forward to surviving to old age. And the one thing I can tell you is that every time I was tempted to not write that check, I wrote that check. And every single time, God blessed it. Every single time, God blessed it. And we are here today, and I'm here today to tell you that tithing will not ever make you suffer. The second story is about how God really does take care of us in the midst of all of this. And this was when we were in that parish in Ohio, and we were destitute. And we had 4 children, and the oldest parishioner in our parish was 105, died. Okay? Very nice old man. I didn't really know him real well, but because he was so old that I didn't have a chance really to connect. But I'm sorry. That's a different story. That's a different story. I'll tell you that one if you want afterwards. One of the people in our parish did die. Let me get my facts straight here. When my first year there, we were blessing houses. And we went to see an older couple, Mike and Helen. That's what their names, Mike and Helen. Helen was a woman that I fell in love with immediately. I had a goatee back then, and also, but it was black. And when I first met Helen, she was the kind of person who came up to me and she went, "You had a gray hair." And I thought, "Oh man, I really love you." You know? And so we went to bless their house. We had a real nice visit and everything else. And shortly thereafter, she wasn't feeling very well. And so she went in for some tests, and they decided to do some surgery. And so when she went in for her surgery, they opened her up and they found out that she had been filled with cancer. There was cancer everywhere. And there was nothing they could do. So they sewed her back up, and we helped her through her final days, and I heard her last confession and everything. And she died. And so we were getting ready for the funeral, and my wife says to me, just in talking, she says, "You know, the kids need shoes. The kids always needed shoes. All four of them needed shoes." And I said, "Really? About how much is that going to cost?" And she said, "Well, I think probably around $200. And $200 then, you might as well have said $5,000 to me. We didn't have $200. And I said, "Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see what we can do. Let's get through the funeral, and then we'll figure out, you know, what we can do." So we have the funeral. It was like on a Tuesday night, and she was being buried in Pennsylvania, about an hour and a half away from Ohio, where we were. And Mike asked me if I would go to bury Helen. I said, "Of course I will." So we get there Wednesday morning, and the undertaker is getting the casket ready for the transport and everything. And Mike and I are just standing there in the church. And he comes up to me and he says, "You know, Father," he said, "Helen and I really, really enjoyed your visit when you and your wife came to bless the house." And she said to me, she said, "Mike," and these were his exact words, she said, "Mike, you remember how hard it was to get shoes for our kids when they were little?" And he put an envelope in my hand with $200. $200. I'm sorry. It's the greatest gift I've ever gotten. Just the greatest gift. It reminds you of how God takes care of us. Sorry. So when you're worried about tithing, and you're worried about giving and whether you can afford and what the church does and everything else, I'm going to say what I said to the kids last night. Just be like Nike. Just do it. Just do it. If you have not tithed, I would urge you to work towards tithing. A lot of people, it's scary. If you're giving $50 and a tithe means you're going to be giving $500, that's a huge leap. Maybe do it in increments. Maybe start proportionally. I always tell my people, at least start proportionally. Start giving 2%, 4%, 5%, and then work up and get up to the tithe. Some people say that if you give it a month, try tithing for a month and see if it affects your life the way you think it's going to affect your life. All I can tell you is that the only thing we've ever known from a tithe is a blessing. And the only thing that I've ever experienced when I didn't tithe was trying to figure out how to pay my bills. And so it's not a prosperity gospel, but God does take care of us. And if your parish is actually going to continue to grow and continue to build a building and everything else, all of our hearts have to be moving in the right direction. All of our hearts have to be moving in the same direction. And I am telling you right now that God has given your parish the resources it needs, because God has given this parish you. And we can do all we want to run away from God, you know. We could be like Adam, you know, after the sin. And God comes and God plays along with him when they're hiding and they've covered themselves with leaves. And God plays along with them and he says, "Where are you?" You can't hide from God. You just can't. And then when he says, "Well, we hid because we were naked," I love that sentence. God says, "Who told you you were naked? Who told you you were naked?" Don't hide from God. Don't be ashamed of your nakedness in front of him. You are who you are because God made you who you are. And if this parish is going to grow and prosper and really glorify God, it's because God has placed it in your hands. Don't run from that. If God did not want it in your hands, I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, he wouldn't have put it in your hands. And so follow through and trust God and do what God wants you to do with everything that he has given you. And he will glorify that, and he will honor it, and he will bless it, and he will always make sure that just like the widow with Elijah, who had the cruse of oil and the thing of wheat, she said, I'm going to make a little cake for my son and I to die. And he says, make one for me first, and then you keep making it, and it never ran out. That's exactly what God does. We might only have a little bit of wheat in our jar, but if we give it to God, the wheat's going to keep getting back in the jar. It's going to be, you know. The last comment I want to make is a very concrete comment, and I made it to your parish council last night. I do not believe this is a temptation here, but I do believe that it could become a temptation. And that is, as you move forward and as you begin to really get into the nuts and bolts of your building program, just like a person might be tempted to not tithe when he has three kids in college, you can be tempted to build the church on the back of your priest and the church itself. And what I mean by that is you can say, well, you know, Father doesn't need a raise this year because we're in a building program. Well, the church, we can cut back here in the church because we're in a building program. We cut back there. You can't do that. You have to live the life of this church and grow the life of this church by taking care of your priest, by taking care of your parish, by taking care of each other, and the building program will happen on top of it. It will. Don't be tempted. You are going to be tempted. All of us are tempted at times. Don't fall into that temptation. Take care of your priest and his family, take care of your parish and its families, and the building will happen in God's good time. It will. I want to read to you finally a passage from the Wisdom of Sirach. Fear the Lord with all your soul and honor his priests. Love him who made you and do not forsake his ministers. Fear the Lord and honor his priests and give them their portion as commanded. The first fruits, the trespass offering, the gift of the shoulder offering, the sacrifice of sanctification, and the first fruits of the holy things. The priests in the Old Testament were the ones who were not given any inheritance. They were not given any property, but they were cared for by the church. If you care for your priest, you're caring for God. When you care for God, your parish will flourish. Okay? That's it. Questions?
I just wanted to thank you for giving us instruction and kindness and love in my experience. Often on the Orthodox Church, there were times where every time there was a particular scripture that came up, I could count on it. We'd just be beaten up and beaten down for money. And it was so painful. So without understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Well, I try not to beat up anybody because I have to stand in front of the Lord too, you know. And I do think that I do think that if we ultimately realize that everything we've talked about for 2 days is simply a matter of the heart, if we realize that it's not about money, it's not about writing checks, it's not about paying bills, it's not about even supporting the life of the church. It's about our heart being given to God and then honoring and glorifying him by what we do with what he has given us. That's ultimately what stewardship is all about. And you can expand it to everything, not just money. You can expand it to taking care of the things out there. You can expand it to making sure that you recycle and all the other kinds of things that we talk about in ecological senses today. You can talk about managing your funds in the way that will allow you to support the church and yourself. Those are all honorable and good things. You know, ultimately, if your heart is converted and you trust the Lord, it all absolutely will work. It all will work. So I would love to come back and speak at the consecration of your new temple.
Let's do it.
Okay. Other questions? No? Okay. Thank you then.
Don't ask me questions later. This is your chance. He said this, Father. What? There he is.
Just
a thought, and I'm not even sure how to phrase a question, but the first and the finest, there's going to be, like you said, a lot of decisions. And there, the obvious cheap way to go, an obvious best way to go. And when you're building a temple to the Lord, how in the world do you make those kind of decisions on the building of it?
Well, I think that ultimately, when you have to make decisions about your temple, you've made some already. Okay, I see a lot of decisions back there. I think that ultimately, everybody prays together and ponders the different questions together. And obviously, you are going to have concrete limitations to some questions. You know, there are going to come some questions about money and things like that. But ultimately, when you work together and you pray about it and you ask God for guidance, I really tend to think things bubble up and they come to the top and things become obvious to people. They just become obvious. You might have to do things in stages, you know. Maybe you don't have the perfect flooring at the beginning, but you can get a CO with a cement slab. That's what my parish did. They had a cement slab for like 12 years. And then they finally, everything's tiled and everything else. We're still working, my parish is 30 years old, and we're still working on the icons. The iconography project in the church is not done. Okay, stages. We have money, we do another project. We have money, we do another project. You know, so I think that those kind of questions, I think that you have, you always have the problem and the temptation of taste. You know, some people have this taste, some people have that taste. You know, I wasn't joking actually, about the color of the carpet, things, or even if there's going to be a carpet. Those are all kind of decisions that have to be made, but some of them are going to become obvious because of cost and availability and whether or not. I told the parish council last night, one of the big questions you're going to face is the balance between getting into debt and waiting, because there's a cost to waiting. You know, you say we don't want a lot of debt. Okay, that's fine. But the more you wait, the more that debt is going to go up. You know, so there's a balance there that, and only you, through prayer and effort and talking about it, can discern all of that. You know, the whole parish. But ultimately, all those questions have consequences. You know, so, but in general, I mean, if people are of goodwill, and I certainly have seen nothing to disabuse me of that impression of all of you, I think that ultimately it all works out. It all will. That final drawing over there with the church and the hall and everything, that's not going to be the first thing you build. Okay? That's going to come in stages, God willing. But ultimately, we trust God.
You shared with us a number of ways in which we can solicit funds. And you shared with us the number one principle is if you don't ask, you don't get. So are there some do's and don'ts in the process of approaching and asking?
Yeah, there are. There are principles that you do when you're talking about major gifts. Mm-hmm. I talked to the council last night about how you define major gifts. That will be up to you guys. You know, if there is someone capable of giving a $100,000 gift, that's a major gift. If you know there's no one capable of giving that, maybe $5,000 is a major gift. But you certainly need to just kind of know, in a sense, know your audience. You need to prepare them. You need to talk to them about your project, but you do need to ask. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I would say is that you do not ask them to give. You ask them to give $10,000. You do not just say, would you make a donation to this project, because you're not going to get very much. If you ask them for a certain amount, they'll either tell you yes or no. But people that are capable of giving large gifts, they're used to being asked for large gifts. And they're not going to, you might think, how can I ask somebody for $25,000? But the person who has the $25,000 is thinking, oh, do they want 10? Do they want 15? Do they want 20? What do they want? Mm-hmm. You know? And if you say, I can't ask for $25,000, well, then you're not going to get $25,000. It is that simple, you know. So
what happens if you say, oh, ask them for $50,000, and they go, oh, no, can't do that?
And you say, thank you for considering, and thank you for giving me the time. you know?
Can you ask him, well, is there an amount that you can give?
Right, sure.
Okay.
Why not? Yeah. All they can say is no. You know? If you realize that the worst thing that can happen when you ask someone for money is that they say no, that's not such a bad thing. Yeah. You'll live. You know?
You haven't lost anything.
You haven't not lost a penny. Nope.
Salesman, every no leads to a yes.
That's right. That's right. Anything else? Well, thank you for your attention. Thank you for your hospitality. Thank you for the invitation, Father.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Shall I press the button?
Yes, please. And we'll